Welcome in, everybody. You are locked into the Philadelphia Eagles. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase joining you on this Monday, Victory Monday edition of the show alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. Gino, how are you doing? Look, growing up for me, the Eagles kind of dictated the mood of my week. And if there was a loss, I was just trying to coast until the next Sunday or Thursday or Monday, whatever they played. But when they won, it made it so much better.
It's always that thing that you look back and it's like, hey, can I wear my jersey the next day at
exactly.
school? And you always knew the kids. Like, I always knew my friends and my friends that were Redskins fans. They always would throw jabs at me about the Eagles. And then my friends that were Giants fans. And every time the Eagles would beat an in-division opponent and you could put on that jersey and your friends, especially the ones that were chirping you before the game, couldn't, it was a great feeling. And that's the way I felt yesterday, Lou, especially hearing DeSean Jackson's name. I literally felt like a kid again. That was truly a remarkable game in the second half. The first half made me put – I kind of felt two ways about that game. Like, the second half, I felt like a kid, but the first game, I felt like podcast scouting, like 100% right. breaking that game down. It's like, what the hell is this team doing? They need to figure it out. They have the talent. And then the second half, like, I knew things were going to open up. I said it to you on the podcast. I said it to a bunch of people that they were going to start slow. We both knew it. We said it yesterday, and they came out back on top, and it was good to see them turn around. There some things that we're going to get into it on this show that we want to see them keep and some things that they need to change, because it wasn't a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. And if they can put together a perfect game, like Alshon said and like I said yesterday, I fully expect them to just rack up the points and be like that Kansas City offense, how they were last year.
Yeah, the Eagles 1-0, 32-27 win yesterday over the Washington Redskins. Me and Gino got into everything from the game on the post-game show, which you can find on any podcast platform or LockedOnEagles.com, and also on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiaseLOE, and at Gino_LOE. Yeah, it was, I think, I don't know, it's just like all these old feelings. It's kind of funny, too, like when you go to a place that you haven't gone to since your childhood, or a song you haven't heard in years, you kind of get like these old feelings that you're like, oh, man, like I remember this. And it was kind of the same thing with DeSean Jackson down the field. And like I said yesterday, Gino, it's so cool, too, because he's been gone now for 6 years. So you figure there's a bunch of like 12, 13-year-old Eagles fans that 6 years ago couldn't really understand what DeSean Jackson was with the Eagles, and that was like the last year of his first stint with the Eagles. So it's awesome to see like a whole new generation get to enjoy this, because he's one of the most electric players in NFL history.
Yeah, he's right there next to Jerry Rice. He's only a couple touchdown
catches. Five away.
Five away. If he did what he did yesterday, he's going to set that by the middle of the season. Like that, it's no reason why teams wanted DeSean Jackson this offseason. There's no reason why Howie Roseman wasn't going to do everything in his power to go out and get DeSean, because he still has the juice left. There's a lot of guys that come out of college that can run 4.3s, 4.4s. You saw it yesterday in Terry McLaurin. The kid had a little bit of juice, but on the other end of that spectrum, there can't use John Ross after yesterday, but there's like your Darius Hayward Bays, those guys that they were burners and they just couldn't put it together. So there are these burners that put it together, have a couple good years in the league, and then once their legs start to die out, they fade out or fade to oblivion. DeSean Jackson has made an entire career off of his legs and has just evolved his career.
I was going to say, he's getting better.
He's getting – we talked about it yesterday, Lou, and just going back and you see the routes that he ran. And once the All-22 comes out tomorrow on Game Pass, I can't wait to see him and just how he manipulates these guys through the routes. And Liam Jenkins, our good friend over at Philly Sports, did a piece on this in the summer. And it's just how he has evolved his game from his first stretch of – being the kid who dropped the ball before he got into the end zone to truly being the leader of that team. And you saw how this team was ramped up when he got involved in the game. Everybody's excited for them to be there. The building went crazy when he caught that ball. There's a reason why DeSean needed to come into this building. And it's just making me think back to 2017 with a Torrey Smith-like element that is way better than Torrey Smith. And it's just crazy to think about that we have a Hall of Famer on the wing, just catching 50-yard bombs from Carson Wentz. We talked about it for the past year on the podcast, Lou, as a hypothetical, and yesterday it became a reality.
Yep, and it was a dream come true for a lot of Eagles fans across the globe. Something that kind of became very less of a dream, more so a nightmare, is the injury status with Malik Jackson. Not as bad, though. It's not the biggest nightmare that you could have imagined. He was carted off the field late in the game. It was the last drive, too, which is what's frustrating. He even said it was like with 2 or 3 minutes to go in regulation. The game's wrapped up. The Eagles are already up by 9, so Washington, I mean, it's all just garbage time points. And he gets carted off with a foot injury. And Doug Peterson today, they didn't give a timetable. They don't go into specifics. They never do. But he was seen with a walking boot on yesterday. He said it was just a little football injury, but Peterson today said to the media that Malik Jackson did suffer a significant injury. That's his exact quote. And that he will miss time. So it's not season-ending. But I told you before the show, I probably expected it to be more so a half a year thing where you see him come back right around, you know, the midway point with guys like Jalen Mills and Craven LeBlanc. But hey, I guess the good thing is they have Timmy Jernigan here right now. And Timmy Jernigan yesterday registered a sack and he has looked good all summer. And I'm very excited for him now to step back up into the role that he's had the past 2 years.
It's a big impact because Malik Jackson was brought here. He was the key free agent they brought in. The very first free agent signed even before free agency became in play. He was cut, so he was allowed to sign before the period started. A guy that is known as a fastball in this Jim Schwartz defense. He played a little edge rusher yesterday, too. Something that Tim Jernigan won't do, but the great thing is at that position, Lou, they have the best defensive tackle in football right now in Fletcher Cox, the way he played yesterday, and a rejuvenated Tim Jernigan, and a Hassan Ridgeway, who looked very good in his own right yesterday. And then we were talking about Bruce Hector before this game and the possibility of moving Brandon Graham or Derek Barnett or Vinnie Curry inside. The way Vinnie Curry played against the run yesterday, I want him on the field all the time, Lou. He looked rejuvenated, even better from his Super Bowl campaign 2 years ago. That one play, when he came off the line and just tracked down the line of scrimmage and stopped the run, that was
so good at doing that.
That was one of the better get-offs you've seen in Vinnie Curry in his career. And the one thing I can always remember about Vinnie was being suspect in the run game because he would over-pursue the line of scrimmage, he would get downfield too fast and lose the edge, and it would lead to a big game. If he can figure out how to put that together and play like he did consistently yesterday, no matter how much time Malik Jackson is out for, if these guys are healthy and they're playing up to the caliber we know they can play, because Tim Jernigan was brought here to be Malik Jackson 2 years ago. That's why they brought him in, and he's now back into that role. And we talked about how he was a starter last year. He is now back into that role. It's not a role that he is unfamiliar with. He's stepping into familiar territory, now off of an injury and 100% healthy. Give me a healthy Tim Jernigan for 8 to 10 weeks. I'll take it.
Absolutely, and he's going to have to step up now big time. He was motivated during the summer. He'll have every opportunity to do so. Like you said, defensive ends, they can play inside. But nonetheless, I was very excited for Malik Jackson this year, and hopefully it's not more than, you know, a 6 to 8 week injury. We'll see a timetable if any does come out. Today's podcast is sponsored by DoorDash. Our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. So coming up on today's show in segments 2 and 3, me and Gino, we kind of got into almost everything the game had to offer on yesterday's post-game show. But I want to, in today's show, get into things we want to see stay from week one on the field and things we want to see go, whether it's players' performances, the way coaches use certain players, play calling, all that and more. We're going to get into that coming up next. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Monday edition of Locked on Eagles. And guys, we're also sponsored today by Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that last a lifetime. With Vivid Seats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person, earning credit back on all purchases made through the Vivid Seats app via the Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program. They help fans find their seats to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, theater, and more, all through the Vivid Seats app. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program and will enjoy credits on all their purchases as part of their rewards. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by a 100% guarantee. And if you enter the promo code KICKOFF, in all caps, K-I-C-K-O-F-F, at the checkout, you can receive a discount of up to $100. Once again, that's our special promo code Kickoff. We thank Vivid Seats for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today. All right, everybody, we are back. This is Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri on the Locked On Eagles podcast, day two of our victory week as the Eagles take down the Washington Redskins on Sunday, 32-27. They are now 1-0, moving on to Atlanta next Sunday, Sunday Night Football. We'll move on to Atlanta week on Wednesday, crossover Wednesday with Locked On Falcons, and then Thursday and Friday shows will also be focused on that week two battle. But we still here, we're only one day removed from the Eagles' big week one win over an NFC East rival, a team that, look, they played a lot better. I mean, me and Gino have been saying it. We were excited about what Washington did during the draft process, and their young players like Terry McLaurin really stepped up and looked good. So we want to continue to get into yesterday's win. And what we're going to start with here, Gino, is some things we want to see stay from week one that we saw on the field for the Philadelphia Eagles. And the big one for me was Carson Wentz's connection to wide receivers. Next Gen Stats showed almost all his completions were on the outsides, as opposed to like last year, he really lived in the middle of the field to guys like Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert. Even when Alshon Jeffrey was seeing the ball in the middle of the field, or the middle of the season, it was in the middle of the field. Week one featured more explosive plays on the outside. Wentz really placed an emphasis this summer on growing that relationship with DeSean Jackson and getting it back with Aguilar and Jeffrey, and you could see it on the field yesterday.
Yeah, if you look at into the analytics and next-gen stats, Carson Wentz's ability to throw to the deep third in the center and to the right portions of the field was absolutely atrocious last year. If you look at it, there's a big heat map, and it makes a big L almost from about 15 yards to 30 yards downfield in the top left. And to his left, center, and to his right, he threw very well. But in the deep portions of the right and center of the field, he did not throw well at all. Where did the two touchdowns to DeSean Jackson come from yesterday, Lou?
Reduced splits.
And where did they end up? Into the far right portion of the field. And for them to get that connection going and to improve on Carson Wentz's ability to spread the ball throughout the field and not just make him a predictable quarterback that he is going to throw to his left. And many quarterbacks around the NFL are very predictable. If you look and watch Thursday night, Mitch Trubisky, he's one of those guys. Carson Wentz has that ability to spread the ball, like you said, to wide receivers, to tight ends. It's not just compact 5 to 10 yards in these intermediate areas like they had to last year. They are now pushing the ball downfield like we fully suspected them to do. And he did it in a great way. And yeah, I'm right there with you, Lou. I want to see them just one game. DeSean has 8 receptions. The next game, Alshon has 8 receptions. The next game, Nelson has 8 receptions. Just continue to motivate these guys and just know that they're all playmakers and they all could have their game. Yesterday was DeSean's day. Next week against Atlanta could be Nelson's day or even J.J. Arcega-Whiteside's day. Who knows? But, yeah, to get the wide receivers involved is something we truly wanted to see evolve from last year over Zach Ertz. Yes, he had a Hall of Fame season last year, but it's not a trend we wanted to see continue. No. I think yesterday in the pod we said that 5-50 is right where we would love him to be throughout the year.
Yeah, it's perfect, and, you know, they came with big plays. I mean, Ertz had a couple big third-down conversions, but at the same time, it's just receivers like Aguilar and DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey, they provide a wider variety of plays that they can pull off. And, you know, with Jackson, too, at any point, a 10-yard route can end up being a 50-yard touchdown. So I really like that Carson Wentz put an emphasis on the receivers yesterday, and you could tell that relationship has been growing all summer long. That is something he is really focused on in July and August throughout mini camps, OTAs, and training camps. So very excited to see that moving forward. DeSean Jackson, 2 touchdowns yesterday. Alshon Jeffrey, 2 touchdowns yesterday. Gino, another one for me here. Miles Sanders, as a lead back in touches and snaps, was something I didn't expect to see week one. And I thought it was a matter of time before he was going to be the lead back in a, while still a committee. He ended up yesterday having the most carries at 11. He led the team in running backs with touches and snaps. And look, I think I want to see more of that. I want to see more than 11 carries. I want to see more receptions and opportunities for them to give him a chance like they did with Darren Sproles. I mean, even yesterday, he made two key third down pass blocks. A lot of the reason that younger running backs don't see the field on three downs is because of their inability to pass block. And Sanders had some big time moments in that area yesterday as well. And he did that also in the preseason. So I want to see more Miles Sanders. I know the stats only say he had 25 rushing yards, but a big time touchdown got called back. He had two other really explosive plays. The other big run, barely, he fell at the 1 or 2 yard line, so that almost was a touchdown too. I thought he had a great debut.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And the thing about Miles Sanders coming out of college was, can he hold on to the football and can he pass protect? I think he answered the question in one of those departments yesterday in pass protection. That was actually going to be one of the things I said I was going to say that I wanted to see him continue to do, because
yeah,
although the technique wasn't great, as Fran Duffy just pointed out on Twitter, I'm literally watching a video in front of me right now on it, his willingness was there. He was willing to step in front of blocks. Some were better than others, but he got the job done, and that's one thing that last year, Wendell Smallwood, you couldn't rely on him. Josh Adams, you couldn't rely on him. Darren Sproles was out. Corey Clement was out. Those were the guys that you had to rely on, and if Miles Sanders is going to be your, quote, bell cow of the committee, he's got to have his ability to pass protect, and he did great in that department. He did drop the ball a couple times on some of those handoff exchanges. That's one thing that they need to get better at, because those led to a couple just blown downs and just loss of 2 or 3 yards, and he's got to continue to get better in that department, but I'm right there with you, Lou. I want to see him improve on the amount of touches that he had, improve on the efficiency of the touches that he had, and you know that you and I love analytics, and I tweeted at you yesterday. Darren Sproles, everything we said about him in that game was backed up by analytics, and his EPA, which is efficiency per the touches that he had, was absolutely dreadful. He was one of the only players on the team that had a negative efficiency rating. So less Darren Sproles, please, more Miles Sanders, and more Jordan Howard, too. I want to see him get involved more, because he was very, very efficient on the touches that he had.
Is there anything else on the offensive side of the ball that you want to see stay from week one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big thing is the ability to convert and have big plays on third down, because one of the trends between 2017 and 2018 was their inability to continue to stay on the field on third down last season, in which 2017, it was one thing that they excelled in. That was the department where Carson Wentz absolutely was the belle of the ball. He went out there every third down. It was just like, okay, he's going to convert third and long, third and short. If it's third and you need a yard, put Carson Wentz out there and QB sneak it, because it's going to work every single time. Third and 15, Carson Wentz converted on those yesterday too. And those are things that you're going to need to do, because when you get into games against better opponents, against the Dallases, against the Seattle, those times when you stay on the field and convert those third downs are going to be the decision makers between winning and losing. Because if you could stay on the field, convert on third and long, third and short, and even in those fourth down short yardage situations, which they failed to a lot last season when they handed the ball off to Josh Adams and didn't have Carson there to QB sneak it, it's one thing that needs it. I don't just want it to stay. It has to stay. You have to continue to be efficient in that department. And even if yesterday that was the ceiling for how well they're going to do on third downs, the floor can't be much worse, because compared to last season, I do not want to see the inefficient third downs that like they had last year. And if they continue to stay on the field and just grind down opponents and beat teams with the time of possession like they did yesterday, just seeing that one statistic that I think they held the ball for 20 minutes in the second half at one point, and
yeah, they had a 19 play drive at one point that killed almost the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's what you want to see, and that all stems from converting on those third downs. So continue with the efficiency in that department. And what was Carson, 12 of 13 on third downs with almost a perfect pass rating, if I'm not mistaken?
His official third down numbers were 12 of 13, 197 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a perfect 158.3 passer rating on third down.
Oh my, that's bananas. That's a franchise.
I don't know how you can get much better. That's literally perfect.
He could have had 13 for 13, but right. Man, that's a hell of a statistic, and that doesn't even count his conversions on fourth and short and third and short either, so add those up in there too.
One other thing I want to see here stay from yesterday, and you didn't really see it until later on in the first half and throughout the second half, is more QB sneaks. And that was something, third down play calling was suspect early on. even last year, it was very frustrating when you would see, you know, these pitch plays on third and one, and you're like, QB sneaks are the most foolproof play on when there's only 1 or 2 yards to go. When you have a guy that's 6'5", 6'6", I forget how tall Carson Wentz is, and 230-plus pounds, 220-plus, whatever, a big boy at quarterback.
In the best offensive line in football.
In the best offensive line in football. That cannot be stopped. Wentz yesterday converted 2 third-and-ones on the QB sneak and a 4th-and-1. It's just something that's so hard to stop for a defense when it comes to the Eagles. And you even see guys like Tom Brady convert it all the time. It's one of the higher percentage plays for success rates, and you got to see more of that throughout this season as opposed to what we saw in the first quarter.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And if we don't have a Josh Adams like 0 for conversion percentage on 3rd and short and 4th and short situations, we'll be all right. And yesterday was a good indicator of that. And continue to do the QB sneak. Just get the yard and continue to live another day, because I saw my Oregon Ducks fail to be able to do that a week ago because they have a quarterback who does not know how to line up under center. And Carson Wentz, you line him up under center, all he has to do is stick his arm over the line, and he did it every single time yesterday. And the guys, they got it done. They won in the trenches against a Washington team that has a very good front four. So that's a good sign, and I'm right there with you, Lou. I want to see that trend continue as well.
All right, so those are some of the things we saw on the field on Sunday that we want to see continue for the 2019 season. Coming up as we wrap up today's edition of the podcast, we'll get into some things we want to see go away and never come back. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on the Locked On Eagles podcast. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, this isn't just for all of you out there who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up. It's Blue Chew. Blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, none of that awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's B-L-U-E, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today. All right, everybody, we are back. Welcome in. It's our final segment of this Victory Monday edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, getting a little bit more into the Eagles' 32-27 win over the Washington Redskins. Me and Gino got into some things we want to see stay on the field next week and throughout the season. Carson Wentz clicking with his wide receivers, his third down dominance, QB sneaks, a featured role for Miles Sanders. Now, Gino, some things we want to see go away. And I talked about QB sneaks. We got to get rid of these third down whiffs when it comes to offensive play calling. No more sweeps on 3rd and short. No more screens on 3rd and 7+. I mean, there was a screen on 3rd and 7 that failed yesterday. A Sproles pitch on 3rd and 1 that lost 2 yards. A 3rd and 10 failed screen pass to DeSean Jackson. They ran the ball with Sproles on 3rd and 4. For me, I just cannot see why you're going to run with Darren Sproles on 3rd down. If you're going to run, give the ball to Sanders or Howard or even Clement, if you ask me. Doug smartened up in the second half, and the Eagles were lethal on 3rd downs, but it was very frustrating to watch early on.
Okay, we're going to do a simple math equation here. Say it's 3rd down and 2, Lou. How many yards do you have to gain to convert a 1st down?
Just 2.
2 yards. Okay, so let's say that your coach dials in a play, and he says, let's throw a toss. Now you take that 2 yards and you subtract 3 or 4 yards. So now you are down to what, 5 or 6 yards?
Right.
So now instead of having to gain 2 yards to convert a 1st down, you now have to gain back 5 to 6 yards, that 4 of which weren't even there in the first place.
This is a great way
at
to
the
put
beginning
it.
Of the play. Go forward on 3rd down. We have seen it so many times in Doug Peterson's tenure that his decision calling on 3rd downs and plays that they are in field goal range. You have to couple that in here as well, Lou, because that is very similar the way that Doug Peterson has approached this. You have to go forward. Put your team in the best situation to convert on 4th down or get the 1st down. Because if it's 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3 and you get 2 yards, like we said on the last segment, you have Carson Wentz, who is 100% on QB sneaks. Just get a yard. Why go backwards? What is efficient about going backwards to go forward? Literally nothing. Stop doing it. I don't want to see that happen ever again. My girlfriend knows my now fiance knows that every single time they throw or go behind the line of scrimmage on third down that she should not say a word because she knows I'm going to go on a rant. And she just looks at me and waits for me to start my rant because that's I do it every single time like I am right now. Because it is unbelievably inefficient to go backward, to go forward. I'm fine with a play call if it's first and 10 or first and 5 because you got an offsides call. Yeah, let's try a little screen behind the line or a bubble screen behind the line. But when it's third down and you need a yard or 2 yards, you had Jordan Howard, who is averaging 7.3 yards carry. You have Miles Sanders and Darren Sproles, who both are very good pass-catching backs and can catch it beyond the line of scrimmage. So let's not go backwards with the ball in any fashion. Line Carson up under center, get 2 yards, live to see another day. I'm right there with you. Doug Peterson was very rusty in his third and second down situational play calling yesterday.
And you know he knows it because they
they have all these analytics people in the building. They 100% know it.
And he called them up. Like, he dialed up QB sneaks yesterday, and it worked every time. And there was – you heard Carson Wentz's third down stats, all these – big conversions to DeSean Jackson and to Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert and Alshon Jeffrey. It's just he gets cute sometimes on these third and longs and third and shorts, and it's just really frustrating because you know he knows it. You know he knows what works because he dials them up, and like you said, they have an advanced analytics department in this organization. So it just makes you pull your hair out when he does this, and once again yesterday, it happened just too often, but he did smarten up, and again, when you got Alshon Jeffrey, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz, Nelson Aguilar, DeSean Jackson, all these guys that can thrive in the intermediate range of the field, and it's third and seven. For me, do not throw behind the line of scrimmage. I like the way you put it. Throw it forward, and I love your analogy for the sweep. Like, I mean, it's third and one or two. Why add another 5 or 6 yards to make up for it? It's just, it's perfect. And speaking of that, the guy that he went to on those cute plays was Darren Sproles. And I talked about it yesterday. You talked about it yesterday. If you follow us on Twitter for really the past year and a half, I would say, you pretty much have a good understanding of my thoughts on Darren Sproles. Him as a featured weapon has got to go. And I'm not just saying as a featured running back, Gino, but there was at one point he led the offense in touches, and they weren't very creative at all. I know we're saying more.
They didn't run one option route with him yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was the perfect game to do it. Washington's linebackers stink.
If you're not going to get creative with Sproles, then I need Sanders out there. I need Jordan Howard out there. And honestly, like, he affected Nelson Aguilar's touches too, Dallas Goedert. I need more of those guys. Goddard and Aguilar only combined for 4 touches in this game. And even Corey Clement. Corey Clement, as a receiver, can do things often that Sproles can't do because of his very small catch radius. He had 0 touches. So it was 12 touches versus 2, 2, 6 for Howard and 0 for Clement. So Goddard and Aguilar, so that's 10 combined between Nelson Aguilar, Dallas Goedert, Jordan Howard, and Corey Clement. I need those guys more involved and less of Darren Sproles.
Yeah, I think the way I laid it out before the season is right where I wanted yesterday to end up, but it did not happen. I said that Sanders should lie between 12 and 15, Howard should be anywhere from 8 to 12, and then the combination of Clement and Sproles should be between 4 and 9. Darren Sproles alone surpassed that number. On those sweeps, or on the tosses that we talk about, Lou, I want Miles Sanders getting the ball. Agreed. He is the best player on the team that can bounce the ball outside.
It's so obvious.
When he did it yesterday, there was that one play where he tried to hit the hole right outside, right between the tackle and the guard. It wasn't there. He bounced it out, tried to get past the tackle. There was no hole there, and then he bounced it out again, beat the linebacker and the corner, and he had an 8-yard gain.
Yep.
He is the most explosive guy. Let him do that. He's young. This Eagles team does not have a, quote, bell cow back, and they don't overvalue their running backs, as you can see how they constructed this roster. So if you're going to get Miles Sanders in his most efficient time in his Eagles uniform, it's in this rookie contract. Run him into the ground, man. Like, get him on the field. Darren Sproles is way past his prime. Like, I'm fine with getting Sproles 4 touches. Like, we talked about this. I think we're both on the same page there. But to take those touches away from a very, very efficient Jordan Howard and a very good up-and-coming back in Miles Sanders is just asinine to me.
The rotation doesn't even really make any sense when it comes to Deuce Staley or Doug Peterson. Whoever's deciding when these running backs go in, it's like Jordan Howard will have 2 really big runs, and then he won't see the field again for another drive and a half. It drives me
nuts. It was
nuts.
Like early 17 when you would see LG going after it, and then it's just like all of a sudden he doesn't see the ball for a quarter. It's like,
or Jay Ajayi is killing the Rams, and suddenly you see Blunt or Clement on the field for the next three drives. And for me, it just, it goes back to my frustration.
What about when they didn't even run, they ran them twice in week two? They had two running plays against Kansas City, like the same thing. Like,
exactly. Yeah. It's just running back by committee. And I see it around the NFL. I see it with Chicago and Green Bay on Thursday night, not giving the ball enough to Aaron Jones and David Montgomery. And I ask, what is the advantage? We say it all the time that running back by committee is a thing. I understand that keeping guys fresh. And also, yes, you don't have to invest as much resources. Mm-hmm. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to spend first and second round picks. You can get three different guys with different skill sets and not use a lot of resources, sure. But when you have guys like Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard, when you invested resources in the position, what is the gain? I want to know, like, somebody tell me on the field, what is the advantage of a running back by committee? People say all the time, well, they won it in 2017 with a running back by committee. It wasn't because of a running back by committee. It was because they had talented players there. And honestly, Ajayi should have touched the ball more. So for me, again, I said it in the first segment, it's hard to get these guys in a rhythm when they keep getting pulled and they're only on the field for like 3 to 4 snaps at a time. And it drives me nuts. It should be Sanders and Howard's featured with Sproles and Clement sprinkled in there. You can use multiple backs, but it doesn't have to be 4 different guys at a time. No. And it doesn't have to be in a perfect balance between three. Like, you get 12 touches, you get 11, and you get 8. For me, if Miles Sanders is clearly the best player, then he should be getting the most touches by a significant portion. And if Jordan Howard is right there with him, then it should be more of a Kamara Ingram kind of thing, more so than just a free-for-all. And it's running back by committee. I'm so sick of it. I'm telling you. I'm encouraged that Sanders saw the most touches, and I hope that increases over time. That's a very encouraging sign. But still, Darren Sproles had the exact role that I thought he was going to have, and Jordan Howard didn't see the field enough. And really, I would have preferred Corey Clement to dip into Sproles' touches too. So I'm really over the way Deuce Staley and Doug Peterson handle these running backs.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's no ifs, ands, or buts to why they do
anything. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want to know why they do it.
Like, there's no rhyme or reason why they do it like that. But I'm fine with the committee because you have the right pieces there. It's just utilizing them properly. I think we're both under that same presumption that we want to go away from this just toss a guy out there just because and stick with the hot hand. The way you saw Howard running yesterday, the way you saw Sanders creating separation and getting to the second level, that touchdown run that he had that was called back, like, you need to get him going so he can get in that rhythm and break off runs like that because he has it in him. And I think maybe my favorite formation yesterday was when I don't remember the exact play they ran off of it, but Darren Sproles is in the slot. They're in a shotgun formation. Miles Sanders is in Carson Wentz back left pocket.
Yeah.
Because you know Darren Sproles is going to be on the field as a decoy, and you know Miles Sanders is going to be in the game to produce. And Sproles still has that ability to be an X factor even if he does not get the touches. And I think we have talked about this many times, and Doug Peterson has to understand that. Even if Darren isn't getting the ball, he has the ability to improve this offense. You don't have to give him the ball 12 times, though. That's just... I thought we would see the days of Darren Sproles being the lead back gone when Chip Kelly left town. It's just continuing to happen.
Like, it's 5 years and running. It's five years and running. And I just, again, and it's never about him. He is a fringe Hall of Famer. It's the complacency that his presence has on the play calling and even on the quarterback. I said on the show yesterday, a 3rd and 7, Carson Wentz, after like 3 seconds, knowing he had Sproles to the right, just dumped it down, and unless Sproles breaks 3 different tackles, he's not getting that 3rd down, and it drives me crazy. I just wish they would use him. Really, I've been very disappointed with the way Chip Kelly and Doug Peterson have used Sproles. I think he has been honestly misused in his time in Philadelphia, and at the same time, if you ask most fans, they'll say Sproles has been a big-time factor for this offense, and he's helped out the organization a lot. But at the same time, I feel like they didn't really handle it the right way for 5 years. So I think running back by committee, the Sproles usage, the 3rd down play calling early on in this game, those are all things me and Gino want to see go. So kind of getting both sides
in
today.
I got to say one more
thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Playing 8 yards off of receivers on 1st and 10, can please stop doing that? You're just inviting them to gain 5 yards. Like, it's just take the underneath and then live to see 2nd and 3rd down. Just let the guys play press. just one time, please. Like the play that Sidney Jones had when he had the pass breakup, he was right on the line of scrimmage with the tight end. Like, just let the guys put their hands on the receivers, please, for once, Jim Schwartz. I am literally begging you to let them put their hands on the receivers.
And he, you know, the thing too is, like, I mean, you got to trust your corners, and if you don't, I mean, have two safeties over the top. You don't always have to have Malcolm Jenkins in the box and roaming around. You want him to be doing that the majority of the time. But if it's third and three and you don't trust that Rasul pressing at the line could hold his own down the field, if he's not 10 yards deep, put Roddy McLeod over him the entire time. There's times you can
how are you
going to
line him up against Terry McLaurin at the line of scrimmage and then not play a single high safety? But then when you have two safeties on the field, you're still lining them off 10 yards off the line of scrimmage. It's like it's ass backwards. It's like, what are we doing here?
It's frustrating, but and I don't really expect it to change, though, because that's something that I've been harping on since 2016, really, since Jim Schwartz got here. So it was fine when they had Leotis McKelvin and Nolan Carroll, and they needed to do that because those corners were terrible. But now I think Sidney Jones, Avante Maddox, Darby Douglas, they're good enough where you should be able to start doing some different things here. And hopefully, look, I think Doug Peterson did adjust. I think Schwartz has shown he can adjust in the past. But in that area, he really has not. So, I mean, he's done it, but for the most part, he really does stand by that philosophy and his mindset as defensive coordinator. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you for joining us on today's edition of the show. We'll be back tomorrow for some stock up, stock down as we move on from Washington week to Atlanta week. We got a primetime game already coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Sunday night, Eagles and Falcons in Atlanta. For my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Louis DiBiase signing off. If you could subscribe to the show, you'll get 4 to 5 podcasts a week into your phone on any podcast provider. Or if you're more of a desktop podcast listener, I know I like to do that a lot when I'm writing my articles, LockedOnEagles.com. And also follow us on Twitter. Me and Gino are on Twitter 24/7 talking birds at DiBiase LOE, at Gino _ LOE, and our show page is at Locked On Birds. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly Eagles fly.